In our Ideas Matter segment, we take time out just every week to check in with the state humanities councils in our seven-state region. Today, we talk with Lori Balfour, who is professor of political science at the University of Virginia, and Michael Washburn, director of the programs at the New York Council for the Humanities, about the writer James Baldwin. Baldwin's work is a powerful lens through which to view the country's current moment of social and racial tension. Balfour and Washburn have created a new Baldwin-related theme for the Council's reading and discussion program. And today we'll be talking about Baldwin's value to our contemporary world, as well as the new program. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Lori Balfour, as well as Michael Washburn. Good morning. How are you both?
Good morning. Well, thank you.
Morning, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Very nice to have you both on the program. Michael, give us a sense of how this particular part of the reading program came to be.
The council has been looking for ways to pivot more towards sort of socially responsive programming. And given the fact that this past year was the 60th anniversary of the publication of Baldwin's first and I think most powerful collection of essays, it just seemed like a perfect sort of moment to you to bring to sort of introduce some of these themes and ideas through Baldwin's writing into the council's programming. So it's part of a kind of a larger programmatic shift of the council away or toward more sort of socially responsive programming.
And just outline a little bit how the reading programs work and how they work across the state and over what period of time. How do you implement them?
Yeah. There's a number of themes. I think there are 13 themes right now, from Baldwin to a program on aging. We have a newly unveiled group on the history of the suffrage movement in America. A variety of themes you can all see on our website. Folks apply, organizations apply, and they select someone to facilitate these conversations, which are basically it's an amped-up muscular book group. And the council provides training on facilitation methods so you can maintain a substantive conversation. We provide the books, and we provide funding. We pay the facilitator $150 per session each time their group meets. And there's a couple of application deadlines each year. The next one is coming up June 24th. So if folks are interested in applying to run the Baldwin program or any of the other reading discussion programs, they should check out the website, and we will do our best to make sure you can run the program.
So, Lori, let's talk to you about what exactly we should be reading and what is being read and the importance of that.
Wow. Well, I would say read it all. But for starters, many people, I think, begin with The Fire Next Time, which Baldwin published in 1963. And that's two essays together that really tries to think through the questions of what would it take to have something like a really democratic society that includes people from all racial backgrounds, that cuts across economic inequality, but don't miss his novels either. Baldwin wrote several novels. He wrote two plays. The Fire Next Time and the essay collection, Notes of a Native Son, that Michael mentioned a minute ago, those are great ways to begin, but I think once you start, you'll find that Baldwin's gift of the language and his capacity to see what's working and what's not working in the mid-century, the mid-20th century, but even today in 2016, is so powerful that you want to keep reading.
When it comes to the topics, many of which Michael mentioned, of what you want to discuss, what does Baldwin's writing bring out, give us opportunities to discuss that perhaps, or to discuss in a manner that we would not be able to do otherwise, do you think?
One of the interesting things about Baldwin's writing is that even though he got his start during the period of the modern civil rights movement, he really sees the limitations of legislative change, which was essential but not enough. He gets us to focus on the many different kinds of violence that are at work in our society, so not only the highly public and visible forms of violence that we've been grappling with over the last couple of years, especially police brutality and other forms of violence, particularly against African-American citizens, but also economic inequality as a form of violence, the abandonment of communities, poor schools as forms of violence. He also helps us to think about our innocence as a society. One of Baldwin's key terms was this language of innocence, and by that he meant an unwillingness to see what's actually happening around us in our communities or in the communities that we don't see on a day-to-day basis because of the great degree of segregation. And Baldwin was a product of Northern segregation, so he understood the ways in which Americans have been divided along racial and class lines. And when he uses the language of innocence, he's particularly, I think, pointed at getting liberal white Americans to see the degree to which we need to take responsibility for the conditions of the broader society. And then finally, Baldwin really encourages all Americans to think about our history and not to think about it in the past exclusively, but also to have an understanding of the ways in which history shapes shapes our present and our possibilities going forward.
Let me go back to innocence for a moment, because that is a fascinating trait in Baldwin's writing, because it is this very different than guilt, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and Baldwin is he's a real critic of guilt. He says guilt doesn't help anybody, that people who are insistent on their own guilt are looking to be absolved, whereas what he's interested in when he talks about innocence is this idea of not seeing something that we really can't not see, of averting our eyes, of failing to take responsibility. So he's really, in many ways, it's an invitation as much as an accusation, and an encouragement to his readers to take on responsibility, not to lay the blame for inequality, for injustice elsewhere.
When you look at that inequality and the overall, I mean, one of the things that you look at in the writing, of course, of how relevant it is, and that in and of itself, given the time stamp on the work, is, I guess, a little discouraging, isn't it?
Well, I think part of what Baldwin helps us to see is not that nothing has changed, but to understand what the underlying features of our society are that perpetuate forms of inequality, that allow us to move to a place where we have an African-American president on the one hand, and yet many, many of the measures of well-being have, you know, show that Black Americans and are worse off than they were, particularly before the Great Recession. So Baldwin, I think what's so powerful is he's not saying things are just staying static. He certainly would not say that the achievements of the civil rights movement were not monumental, because they were. But he wants to get us to think about what are the dynamics that allow for the abandonment of communities, that that require that Americans be reminded that Black Lives Matter. What are those features that we take for granted, the assumptions that shape our lives and also that allow us to live with gross inequalities in access to healthcare, education, decent housing, jobs, and so forth.
Do you think that he thought we were good at coming to terms with history, and are we getting better at coming to terms with history?
That's a great question. I have a daughter who's completing eighth grade today, and I think when I look at what she has learned, I think that there is more sophistication, that students are asked from an earlier age to have an understanding of our history. She's certainly gotten a much better history about the civil rights movement, for instance, than I received. But that said, I think one of the things that Baldwin warns against is insulating the present from that past, that is, thinking of the history as the past and not as part of what's shaping our lives today. So even as we have more memorials, we have apologies for historic injustices, we have a lot more attention to history, the piece that Baldwin insisted on that I think as a society we have yet to accomplish is to take that on board as something that is not simply past, but that is part of our present. We haven't digested that history. And I think that, for Baldwin, that was one of the real challenges he saw confronting Americans going forward.
Michael Washburn is director of the programs at the New York Council for the Humanities. So given what we've just been talking about, how has the program gone so far, and how do you see it expanding over the next several months?
We've had one sort of session of the program that happened in the early spring, late winter, and it was a remarkable success. It ended up being hosted by a variety of organizations that we, the council, had not previously partnered with, which was great. A lot of them happened here in New York City where we're based, but there were a few upstate organizations that hosted it as well. And without fail, we've had sort of an extravagance of positive responses to it. It's been, I think, one of the most successful sort of initiatives that the council's put forward in the last few years. People seem to really be finding, through Baldwin, they're finding ways to kind of access what I've been thinking of kind of as narrative equity. And people are really, in these groups, finding their own voice and really feeling, you know, they're in a solid space to kind of explore their own experiences, you know, with the aid of Baldwin, with the aid of the facilitators who helped guide the conversations. So I think it's really been a great success and doing, you know, no small part to Laurie's help pulling the program together for us.
You can find out more information about the program by going to wamc.org/roundtable. There are links there and also a link to this interview. Laurie and Michael, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. I appreciate it. Best of luck.
Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.